The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories, recalls the 1969 season. Following repeated All-Ireland final defeats throughout the decade, the Kingdom remained in search of their first crown since 1962. Throughout the programme, we'll reproduce extracts from the Kerryman newspaper. Gary O'Sullivan's will be the voice you hear each time.
Part 1.
Kerry went into 1969 off the back of a defeat in the previous year's All-Ireland final. Then the Kingdom had lost to Down, 212 to 113. Kerry had also lost All-Ireland finals in 64 and 65, both to Galway, while 66 and 67 saw the Kingdom fail to progress from Munster. It was a frustrating period for Kerry, but it was felt their time was coming. Jackie Lyne's appointment as manager in 68 was seen as vital to the county's progression. Radio Kerry analyst Wishy Fogarty certainly believes so.
It all started in 68, just, you must remember. It all started in 68 when Jackie Lyne came in and took over the team. No one else would train the team. And I remember he stating publicly that there's nothing wrong with Kerry football, even though they had been beaten from 62 on. They had been beaten well. And of course in 1960 and 61 they had been beaten by Down. And then 60 they won against Roscommon. If you like, from 59 up until 69, they just won that one All-Ireland in 62. And football in the county was very, very bad. Coming up in 1968, Johnny Cullity retired, Mick O'Connor retired, Sean Murphy had retired, and Mick Dwyer had retired. Nowadays today, you hear an awful lot about Mick McCarthy of Kilcommon having been retired for 2 years and coming back. But all those men had retired then, and what did they do? They came back. And they played in All-Ireland and won All-Ireland finals. And they were all 30, 31, 32 and 33 years of age. And they were the stars of that particular Kerry team. They did in that era what other fellas are doing now. And the most dramatic comeback of all was in 1968. Longford were beaten by Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final. And Teddy Bowler, he was a standing goalkeeper. They had no goalkeeper at the time. And they picked the team then and they left the goalkeeping position open. Three selectors left the selection room in the Park Place Hotel. They walked up the road here, walked into Johnny Cullity's house, and they said to Cullity, in the middle of the meeting, we're picking you, will you come out of retirement? Cullity made a comeback after being picked, if you like, in his own house.
Kerry fan Liam Shanahan believes Mick O'Dwyer's comeback was just as spectacular.
He broke his two legs. They said, sure, he'll never again play. Himself and Connor retired for 2 years. And they had a trial above in the sports field here. Should have done, went up and they gave an exhibition.
Reflecting on their All-Ireland final loss from the previous season, then Kerry player Tom Prendergast felt they had the personnel, but the side just needed a little bit of tweaking.
1968, we were narrowly beaten. And then in 1969, with a few personal changes and more, in particular, more positional changes, the team was, I'd say, probably you had 13 or 14 of the team that were there in 1968, only that's playing in different positions. Even in my own case, I had played corner forward in 1968 and I was wing back in 1969. And DJ Crowley had played full forward in 1968 and he ended up in centre field in 69. So there were some good positional changes made, and I think they made the difference.
Prendergast's teammate Donie O'Sullivan believes the team did not do itself justice in the 1968 final loss.
The most disappointing thing in that, in my mind, was that we knew we were better than we played. I think we knew we did. We played poorly on the day. It's the worst way, I think, of all, to walk off in a final knowing you didn't do well and you could have done better as a team, and that there was still, as I say, something left in the tank. Whatever, you know, it was one of those days that it happens, and we made several mistakes and tactics might have been great and we still lost by 2 points. So it was a disappointing day. And then for some of us, well, some were older than I was, like, it looked like the end of the road.
O'Sullivan could have been lost to another sport in the late 1960s. Whilst continuing his studies in the US, he was lined up to join the New York Jets, but he opted to return home instead.
I was out there for a good while, a couple of years, was in a university there, and they were training in the university field because Shea Stadium was baseball on there. I didn't even know what American football was, but they took me down a few times to Shea Stadium to try out with them, and I was supposed to join them the following year as a kicker only, but I was finished at that time, and the pull at home was too great. I think it's glamorized as well. You know, this money wasn't there. It was supposed to be there, but the life is different there, and the kicking might be enjoyable and all the rest, but you're not a member of the team really. It's a lonely game if you're just kicking and that's all you're doing. And there was nothing like our games here. The enjoyment would not be there. But I have no regrets whatsoever.
DJ Crowley also played in the All-Ireland final loss of 1968. His introduction to inter-county football the season before was bizarre.
I suppose when I seriously came on the senior team, it was Whit Sunday, and I was at the stadium watching a match with my father. A local derby was on first, and over the Tannoy system, it said it was Dinjo Crowley from Ramore in the stadium. Will you please go to the Kerry team's dressing room? And I met Jackie Lyon for the first time. He says, any chance, he says, you haven't your gear with you? I said, outside the back of the Morris Minor. He says, go out, get it fast. He says, you're playing in the 40.
In 1969, Kerry won the National League final. Former Radio Kerry commentator, the late Liam Higgins, scored the winning goal against Cork in the divisional final. After that, Kerry defeated Offaly in the home final to go through to the league final proper in New York. Tom Prendergast says there were huge benefits from the entire National League campaign.
We had been beaten in 68, as we've already said, and then there were a few changes being made here and there, and players were being pushed about. So the National League helped in many ways to settle the team going into the championship. And when we got into the championship, then everybody more or less knew where they were going to be. Of course, with the exception of myself, who in the National League had still been roving around the forward line, not very successfully.
Before Kerry could pack their bags for the States, they had the no small matter of their Munster Championship opener. The Kingdom, without an All-Ireland title since 1962, were to begin that year's quest for the Sam Maguire against Waterford. Joining the aforementioned quartet of O'Connell, O'Dwyer, Cullity and Murphy on the field of play against Waterford were fullback Paul O'Donoghue and Seamus McGarrett in the corner. Centre-back Mick Morris, flanked by Donny O'Sullivan and Michael O'Shea. Midfielder DJ Crowley. A half-forward line of Brendan Lynch, Pat Moynihan and Eamon O'Donoghue. And in the full-forward line, Dom O'Donnell and Mick Fleming. The game against Waterford provided a worthwhile test.
When a dropkick from midfielder Pa Walsh from about 50 yards out finished up in the net after only 9 minutes, it was obvious that Kerry were not out for a Sunday stroll. Seconds before that, Seamus Fitzgerald appeared from nowhere to save what looked like being a certain goal, following a free by midfielder Seamus Keevans. Two Mick O'Connell points put Kerry ahead again, 5 points to 1-1. But when elusive forward Vinnie Kerwin swung over a point in the 16th minute, the sides were level again. For the remainder of the half, Kerry were masters. By half-time, they had added 1-6 to the 2 points of their opponents.
The Kingdom goal scorer was Mick Fleming. Kerry led 1-11 to 1-4 at the break and went on to build on their advantage.
Within 2 minutes of the restart, Kerry had stretched their lead with two well-taken points from Brendan Lynch. With the second half only 8 minutes old, Waterford launched another determined attack, and when Mick Power's probing pass found Tom Walsh, the hard-working full forward whipped the ball past Johnny Cullity. Clancy placed Pa Walsh and he added a point, and this was added to 2 minutes later by another free from Kerwin. But try as they did, they could never get nearer to them than the 4 points which separated the sides at this juncture. As it was, most of Kerry's scores came from long range. Halfway through the second half, Kerry were far from being out of the wood. The defence was unsure under pressure. Kerry added 5 points in the closing 16 minutes to Waterford's solitary point to leave the Kingdom comfortable winners in the end. Over the hour, the best of the Kerry halfbacks was Donny O'Sullivan. Mick O'Connell was again a tower of strength at midfield. Pat Moynihan was the big success in the Kerry attack. If for nothing other than his deadly accuracy from long range, in all he notched 5 well-taken points. He was a joy to watch in the opening half as he roved outfield, won possession and grabbed 4 precious points.
When the team was retired, it was on a scoreline of Kerry 118, Waterford 27. That win ensured a Munster final with Cork, a match which was put back 1 week at the request of the Kerry County Board due to Kerry's trip to America. In the States, Kerry were to face New York in a league final over 2 legs. The matches would see Seamus McGarrett and his teammates come up against some of their fellow county men.
New York had a very good team that him. They had some Kerry, very good Kerry fellas with them, actually, the Foleys and McMinehan. They really expected to beat us.
Kerry man newspaper reporter John Barry was among the travelling party.
There were 2 amazing games. New York had a really great team. Those 2 matches in Gailey Park were absolutely fantastic affairs. In the second leg, Kerry looked a beaten team. They were 3 points down with just a few minutes to go. Mick O'Connell, who had been injured in the first the game. He came on as a sub at half time, and in those last 3 minutes, he scored three absolutely brilliant points to take the game into extra time. Now, New York wanted Kerry to stay over for another week so the game could be played the following Sunday. But Kerry players, they felt that they couldn't take another week off. They had to go back to work. Extra time was played, and as it turned out, Kerry won handily enough in extra time. But, the second leg of that league final in particular was just an incredible game. Played in heat that was in the high 90s. I saw something in those two games that maybe, led me to believe that Kerry were something special, and they proved that.
Both legs of the final ended in a draw, and as John Barry mentioned, extra time had to be played second day out. Seamus McGerald recalls the conditions the players had to endure.
We had to play extra time in 110 degrees of heat, which wasn't easy. And as I remember, while they were debating what should be done after the second draw, we were standing on the railway line in the shade, and we must have drank buckets of water.
That journey to New York, combined with an earlier trip to England, was the basis for the remainder of the season, according to Seamus McGerald.
It's always said that you have to lose one to win one, and we lost to Down in 68, and I think that cemented our team together to make a special effort in 69, very capably led by Jackie Lyon, who was our trainer. We trained very hard for that game, and we went to Wembley in June of 69. We played in the Wembley tournament. Then we went to New York and played the league final in New York later on in June. And I think those two trips were, they really cemented the team together.
Once Kerry returned home, attention turned to the Munster final. The Kingdom made four changes from the first round victory over Waterford. Tom Prendergast came in at wing back in place of Michael O'Shea. Up front, Pat Griffin, Mick Gleeson and Liam Higgins were all introduced. The ones to go were Pat Moynihan, Dom O'Donnell and Mick Fleming. Brendan Lynch says that Munster final was approached with caution.
What I remember is of being very apprehensive about the result beforehand, in that we had played Cork in the National League in March or April of that year, and they really won everywhere but on the scoreboard. They were quite a strong side, and I expected that Munster final to be a very close game.
The Munster final was a strange affair.
Kerry played against the fairly stiff breeze in the first half, scoring a point after only 2 minutes. Denny Long retaliated with a good point for Cork, but Mick O'Dwyer had a similar score at the other end, and then Mick O'Connell curled over a handsome free to make it 3-1. DJ Crowley tore through for a splendid point in the 12th minute. The first of Cork's two penalties happened in the 15th minute, and although the second one eventually resulted in a point by Mick Burke, it was poor compensation for the Corkmen. Brendan Lynch won possession from a kick by DJ Crowley, passed to Michael Gleeson, and the Lishavigeen man belted the ball over the bar. It was left to Tim Hayes, who had come on as a sub at 40 yards for Cork, to show his colleagues where the posts were in the 28th minute. He tapped over a free, and this was followed 2 minutes later by a point by Ray Cummins.
That brought the deficit come half-time to the minimum. Kerry 5 points, Cork 4. The second period belonged to the Kingdom, Cork having to wait until the very last minute to get their sole score of the half.
It took 3 minutes to get the first score, a point from a free by Brendan Lynch after DJ Crowley had been fouled. By the end of the third quarter, Kerry had increased their lead to 6 points, 10-4. The nicest movement during this period resulted from a sideline kick by Seamus Fitzgerald deep in his own half. Pat Griffin won possession and found Mick O'Connell, who in turn placed Bill Higgins. The Dingle man was clean through, with only goalkeeper Morgan to beat, but his well-placed shot was brilliantly deflected out for a 50. Mick O'Connell was dead on the mark with the 50, and from the kick-out, the Valencia man laid on a pass for Brendan Lynch, who took a good point. Then Mick O'Connell took the 50, and he sent it sailing between the posts. But referee Maloney said that Cork's Tim F. Hayes had been standing too near to him and ordered the kick to be retaken. What cheers O'Connell got when he also put the second kick over. Points by Mick O'Connell, Eamon O'Donoghue and Pat Griffin too emphasised further the superiority of Kerry before the end. Cork did get a last-minute consolation goal from Tim F. Hayes, their only score of the second half.
Kerry won 16-4. A Kerry victory may have pleased followers of the Green and Gold, but not everyone was happy.
Last Sunday's triumph can hardly have given satisfaction to the many thousands who flocked to the athletic grounds in anticipation of a memorable encounter. For truly, this was a whopping flop as a football spectacle, with only one team in it, practically from start to finish. Seldom can a game that promised so much in the way of excitement have produced so little. Kerry played all the good football, and poor Cork were made to look just about as effective as a bunch of novices. Considering their superiority, Kerry could easily have won by a bigger margin. A further indication of Kerry's superiority is the fact that the outstanding man on the Cork team was their goalkeeper Billy Morgan. He brought off two particularly good saves from Pat Griffin, one in each half, and stopped a shot from almost point-blank range by Bill Higgins in the second half. Cork will point to the fact that they missed two penalty kicks at a stage in the first half when a goal would have been of great value to them. Dennis Coughlin took the first and hit the foot of the left upright. The ball rolled across the square and Kerry cornerback Seamus Fitzgerald dived on it to prevent the in-rushing Cork forwards from goaling. From the resulting second penalty, Donal Hunt shot low and fairly straight at Johnny Cullity, who quickly covered the ball and cleared. Ironically, just before these penalties happened, some of the Cork forwards claimed the ball had gone over the goal line. Johnny Cullity agreed afterwards that the ball may have been just inside the line. Crowley was superb at midfield for Kerry, overshadowing Mick O'Connell. Cork's troubles started at midfield, where Mick Burke and Dinny Long and later Mick O'Loughlin were decisively beaten.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 2.
Mayo were to be Kerry's opponents in the All-Ireland semi-final. Micheál O'Shea was drafted back in against Mayo, Donie O'Sullivan moved to centre-back and Mick Morris made way.
Kerry lost the toss and had to play against the fairly lively breeze. However, they broke away straight from the throw-in and following work by O'Connell, Griffin and Higgins, Brendan Lynch drove over the first point. Mick O'Connell added another point 3 minutes later when sending over a beautifully judged free for a foul on Higgins. Mayo opened their account with a point in the fifth minute. Mayo are back for an equalising point in the ninth minute from Joe Corcoran free. By the 12th minute, Mayo had taken a 2-point lead, but then Griffin started to come more prominently into the game and two fouls on him resulted in points by Mick O'Dwyer. Shots by Bill Higgins and Eamon O'Donoghue could easily have been goals. In the 20th minute, Willie McGee kicked over a point. O'Connell pointed a free in the 22nd minute and Mick O'Dwyer followed with a beautiful point from play 2 minutes later. This made the score 6-5 in Kerry's favour and their lead was increased when Pat Griffin pointed in the 25th minute. Mayo fought back before half-time to level matters, 7 points all, thanks to points from frees by Joe Corcoran.
The Kingdom started the second half the brighter, and at one stage were coasting through to the All-Ireland final.
Kerry were quickly into their stride, and Pat Griffin kicked over a point. An exchange of points between Joe Corcoran and Mick O'Dwyer followed, before Mick O'Connell made it 10-8 in Kerry's favour, when tapping over a 21-yards free. Mick O'Connell added another point in the 41st minute. Mick Gleeson cleverly deflected over a shot by Pat Griffin in the 43rd minute. Further Kerry pressure yielded only 1 point in the 49th minute. Kerry seemed to almost panic when Griffith's goal went in, losing their assurance and rhythm. The movement that led to the goal was started at midfield by PJ Loftus. He found Tommy Fitzgerald, who in turn placed Griffith. The Clare Morris man brought the ball right through to the edge of the square before shooting past the helpless Johnny Cullity. Joe Corcoran pointed a free from about 40 yards range to leave only a single point between the sides. The tension was almost unbearable in the last 4 minutes. Mick O'Dwyer had two wides from awkward angles, one from a free and the other from play, before Mayo were presented with a glorious chance of scoring the equaliser. John Morley took a quick free at midfield and found Willie McGee, less than 21 yards out to the right of the post. McGee made straight for goal, and if Seamus Fitzgerald had not pulled him down, the Mayo man might easily have scored a match-winning goal.
McGarrett claims he was merely acting on the advice of his captain.
Johnny Cullity roared, "Don't let him in!" So I took Johnny's advice, I didn't let him in, and it was only 40 yard free, to the little bit to the side of the goal. What I remember about it was Johnny saying to me, "The most I can get out of this is a point, and we'll get another chance, whereas if you let him in, he could have scored the goal."
DJ Crowley recalls what happened next.
Seamus O'Dowd, he took the free, and I covered the kick, actually, which is something that isn't done as much today, as we always had to cover the kick. It was nearest man to the ball, or if it was your man taking the ball, you covered his kick. You know, you stood 14 yards away, you intimidate him some bit. But I remember putting up my hands, and the ball passed just outside my left wrist, and I looked around, I thought it was going over the bar, and it just went barely just outside the left upright. And the whistle went after that, and he went down on his two knees knees in the ground, and he was pretty emotional after it. And I went over and I picked him up and I shook his hand, and I don't think he played any football after that at intercounty level.
Kerry just about were through to the All-Ireland final, 14 points to 110. Kerry man reporter John Barry spoke for a whole county when he wrote in the following week's paper that
it will be a long time before we forget the fright we got in the last 9 minutes. For the previous 51 minutes, we had happily watched our men establish mastery over Mayo, and although they had a lead of only 5 points to show for their supremacy, we were in no way worried. Then it happened. Sensationally, Mayo broke through for a goal, and a rampant Kerry were left fighting desperately with their backs to the wall. In the finish, they pulled through by a point, but they can count themselves decidedly lucky to have done so. Mayo missed chances in those tension-charged late exchanges that could have easily have meant the difference between victory and defeat for them. Des Griffith and PJ Loftus were wide with scorable kicks, and Seamus O'Dowd had the miss of the match from a 14 yards free 2 minutes from the end. Why were Kerry not able to build up a bigger lead than the 5 points advantage with 9 minutes to go? Primarily, I would say because of sheer bad luck. Full forward Bill Higgins hit the crossbar from point-blank range after 14 minutes. Eamon O'Donoghue sent in a shot, which was stopped on the line by goalkeeper Rooney after 17 minutes. Mick Gleeson hit the upright with a low shot after 22 minutes and was frustrated again shortly afterwards when a Mayo defender just got his leg to a shot by him in front of goal. Gleeson was foiled of a goal midway through the second half when his deflected shot hit the upright and bounced into the hands of goalkeeper Rooney. Bill Higgins connected beautifully with the centre by DJ Crowley in the 49th minute and sent the ball inches to the wrong side of the upright. That O'Connell did more than any other man on the Kerry team to wreck Mayo's hopes cannot be denied. But who will forget either the brilliance of Tom Prendergast, Mick O'Shea and the O'Donoghue brothers Paddy and Eamon?
The 1969 All-Ireland final was to be contested by Kerry and Offaly, a repeat of that year's National League final which Kerry had won. In the All-Ireland semi-final, Offaly accounted for Cavan 3-8 to 1-10 after a replay. The squad set about getting ready for the Leinster champions, as DJ Crowley recalls.
When Jackie took over in 68 and 69 and 70, we played in those three All-Irelands. We trained 7 days a week. I came from Kinsale to Tralee 7 days a week. Pat Griffin met me outside Macroom. He was in Clonakilty, and two of us travelled together, and we all met in Tralee. But we did it 7 days a week. I was 12 stone 7 in the final of 68, and I was a year older, I suppose, and Bowen was a bit stronger. I was 13-4 for 69 and 70s.
Wishy Fogarty remembers the training he used to put in with Johnny Cullerty in order to be ready for days like this.
We used to train together after working St. Finan's Hospital all during the winter. We'd tug out above, hop into his car, drive somewhere, and we'd go running on the roads. I'd say we were one of the first two people. We'd run from here in O'Sullivan's place, and we'd run up to Kilcommon, up to the church in Kilcommon, and we'd turn around and we'd have a little flashing light in our hands to protect us from the traffic in the middle of the winter. I remember nights that were snowing that we were training, both of us running up the road together, and we'd run back down again. And then I remember we'd go back to the golflings in Killarney behind in the dark, and we'd be running along. He'd know the golflings because he was a very good golfer, and we'd do the whole course behind. And other nights then we'd go to the Killarney race course, and we'd climb over the gates, and we'd run. We might do the race course in Killarney. We might do run around the race track about 6 or 7 times, and we'd do a number of sprints and stuff like that.
When it came to the final, Kerry had a great advantage over their opponents. The Kingdom had been in attendance at Offaly's semi-final, as Brendan Lynch explains.
For their semi-final, Kerry, I can't remember the reason that a minor game was cancelled, but Kerry played as a curtain raiser to Offaly's semi-final against Kildare. So we were all present and able to see them up close, and they were actually quite impressive, and I think that put us on our guard. We had beaten them pretty convincingly in the National League final, so I think having seen them in the semi-final, it perhaps eliminated any complacency.
Mick Morris for Donny O'Sullivan was the only change for Kerry for the final.
Pre-match doubts about the fitness of Mick O'Connell had become almost unbearable as match time approached. And then suddenly, there he was to take his place in the team picture. At that moment, every Kerry man in Croke Park knew that it was birthday time, our 21st.
Teammate Seamus McGarrett remembers well the moment O'Connell appeared on the field of play.
We weren't sure ourselves until the last minute whether he would be playing or not, and when he came to running out to Croke Park, he sent us all out first, and he waited himself for maybe 30 seconds. And I'd say he was probably saying to himself that the Kerry supporters would be wondering, am I coming or am I not? And he comes out to a rapturous report. I thought the stands would collapse with the noise from the stands when he appeared in the field.
The wider world may have been fretting about O'Connell's fitness. His midfield partner, DJ Crowley, was a lot less perturbed.
I got a knock on the door the night before the match. Who was there but the man himself, Mick O'Connell. And he says, can I come in a minute? And I said, yeah. And he said, how are you feeling about tomorrow? I said, I'm feeling good. He said, you're not nervous? Well, I said, you're the usual tension. I said, but why I came in, he says, is just to let you know, he said, no, he says, I'll be playing with you at midfield tomorrow. And that was great news.
Substitute for the final, Rishi Fogarty, says the whole build-up to the big day itself is to be cherished.
It's a dream come true, really, when you're involved in it. And it goes very fast. And you must try to soak it up as best you can. I remember when we were training for the All-Ireland 69, now, I remember we trained in Tralee and we also trained in Killarney, so we had a good choice of places. But it's a very exciting nights after training when you have the crowds around and they're looking for autographs and people wanting to talk to you and photographers around and things like that. And the one thing you'll find was, the one thing you'll discover is in the run-up that you'll find your body getting fitter. You'll find yourself going faster, unknowns to yourself. And next thing you'll say, gee, I'm in peak shape. I know I'm in peak shape. And you'll see the players vying against each other in sprints and stuff like that. And you will know in the run up to the final. And then, of course, in the week preceding it, then there's press conferences and there's photographers around. And then the day going to the match and staying in the hotel and being nervous and going to the game and looking out the window of the bus and seeing the thousands of people and they're going to Croke Park. And that particular time then when I was with Kerry, we were inside in the old dressing rooms and togging out and hear the roar of the crowd outside and all of that. It's wonderful to experience it even just once. It's something different altogether from refereeing in Croke Park. It's different from managing teams in Croke Park. I managed St. Finan's Hospital on two occasions when we won All-Irelands in Croke Park. So I was on the sideline. So I'd have an idea what it was like to be a selector and a manager there also. But to be a player there is everything else is only second, really.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group. Proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
Kerry won the toss and elected to play with the strong wind. The decision reaped immediate dividends.
So we're ready for the throw-in. Larry Cocklill, Willie Bryan up against Dinjo Crowley and Mick O'Connell. We're just about ready for the throw-in. Kerry playing from right to left in the first half. The ball is in and the game is on. The 1969 All-Ireland final. Dinjo Crowley to Tom Prendergast. Mick O'Connell drives it long inside. Gleeson turns to the left, kicks it high and over the bar. Mick Gleeson with a great score.
Lovely point by Gleeson in front of him, 16. Mick O'Connell got the ball, he turned around, left a lovely pass into Gleeson. And the man from Spar turned around and with the left leg popped the ball over the bar. A lovely point by Gleeson.
Offaly were level after 5 minutes as
Sean Evans grabbed a centre by Larry Coughlin and swung over a fine point. The son of Kerry parents was letting us know whose side he was on.
Play swung to the other end, with the Offaly goal having a narrow escape.
And Sean Evans is getting a point for Offaly. It's 1 point apiece as Johnny Cullity places the ball now for Pádraig O'Donoghue. Yes, 5 minutes gone here and Pádraig O'Donoghue with the kick out. Drives it out well into the middle of the field. Gathered by Brendan Lynch. Brendan Lynch plays it out to Dinjo Crowley. Crowley gets it out for his man. He's 70 yards out from goal. Dangerous ball inside. Spilled inside. Then Mick O'Dwyer's in with a chance. And Martin Furlong has smothered his kick. That could have been a goal for Kerry.
Oh, great save by Martin Furlong. He threw himself down on top of Mick O'Dwyer's boot. It looked like a certain goal. It was great work there by Dinjo Crowley and Brendan Lynch. Wonderful save by Furlong. Right down on top of the corner. Farwell's boot. O'Dwyer should have finished that.
Tony McTague pointed a free to give Offaly the lead after 13 minutes. Kerry then took over.
Pádraig O'Donoghue to DJ Crowley. Crowley doing well at midfield so far. Good ball inside to Liam Higgins. Liam Higgins catches the second attempt and Liam Higgins has put them level again.
Yeah, lovely point by Dylan Stoneman. The long kick out came and Dinjo Crowley having the absolute blinder. Remember that Kerry up there with a very, very strong breeze in their back. And Dinjo Crowley left the ball into Liam Higgins and the man from this ball turned around, popped the ball over the bar. Lovely point by him.
So now Greg Hughes to take this kick out. Martin Furlong placing the ball very carefully for him. The full back will drive this one out. Mick O'Dwyer trying to get his hands hands on it, out to the middle again. Well held by Mick O'Connell for Kerry. Left footed effort inside again. Kerry pulling on the pressure. It's a high ball for Liam Higgins again. It's Brendan Lynch an extra factor as Liam Higgins did get that chance, but just gone right and wide.
Yeah, Higgins will be disappointed with that. The kick out came. Mick O'Connell went up beautifully and he brought the ball down with the tips of his fingers by with one hand down to the other into Higgins. Higgins on the round, wind at his back, kicked the ball wide at the his 16 goal. 2 points each. He'd be disappointed with that.
2 points each. So awfully against the wind here in this first half. They have possession again here. Mulligan in the half-back line doing well. Plays it out to the middle of the field. Brendan Lynch wins the ball independently. Sells a little dummy. Brendan Lynch finds room for himself. And Brendan Lynch lands a brilliant score.
That's an absolutely superb point by the Beaufort man. The man with the left leg. He has a deadly left leg. The ball came out. Larry Cotton failed to collect it. It broke out to Brendan Lynch. And Brendan Lynch from 40 yards out with a strong wind at his back. Now dropped the ball right on top of Martin Furlong's net. Kerry lead 3 points to 2.
And Kerry with the strong wind. And to be fair, they need to get the points over with this strong win.
They would indeed, Gary, because they said you must go in at half time when you have a strong win at your back. You want at least 5 or 6 points ahead. And Kerry at the moment aren't playing well.
Awfully with the kick out again towards the middle. Then Joe Crowley again goes high. Eamon O'Donoghue, dangerous ball. And Brendan Lynch coming through. Mick Gleeson with the chance. And Mick Gleeson is after landing another point for Kerry.
Lovely point by Kerry. It all came from Eamon O'Donoghue. Eamon O'Donoghue into Brendan Lynch. Brendan Lynch was going through. He got a welt of his shoulder. He was upscuttled. He turned the ball, passed the ball out to Mick Gleeson, and Mick Gleeson, the man from Spa, just outside the town of Killarney, popped the ball over the bar. Lovely point by Gleeson.
The scoreboard read, Kerry 4 points, Offaly 2 points after 16 minutes. Chances were at a premium on a day of difficult scoring conditions, and every one counted. Entering the 24th minute, Offaly spurned a glorious opportunity.
Tony McTeague gathers the ball for Offaly. Ambrose Hickey now. Good work by the centre forward into John Cooney. Cooney's got inside his man. Good run from him. 20 yards out. Here's the chance. Ambrose Hickey drives it long inside. And there's pressure on Johnny Cullity. Great catch on the line, usually by Johnny Cullity.
Yeah, great save by Cullity there. The ball came across the face of the corner. The Killarney Legion members at the near post. He backpedaled very quick. Cut the ball. Looks like they've gone into bed. Great save by Cullity.
More pressure on again. Here's Evans. A great block by Mick Morris. Fantastic block by him. It's Pat Keenan has the ball. It's not gone free yet. It's inside again. More pressure on Johnny Cullity. And he got a fist to it, or did it touch the crossbar? The way it's cleared.
Yeah, that was a great save again by Johnny Cullity. The ball was dropping into the top corner of the net. He got back. Some forwards coming in top of him. Got his fist to the ball. Just cleared it out. What a wonderful block down by Mick Morris, by the John Mitchell's man, and Sean Evans. Great block down and great save by Cullity.
Offaly had not scored since the 13th minute and would not do so again until the second half. Kerry, meanwhile, increased their advantage before the break.
And this free out is driven out towards the middle of the field. Mick O'Dwyer looks to be back to action. It's DJ Crowley. Gets the ball from Eamon O'Donoghue. Good return by O'Donoghue to Crowley. Crowley causing problems at midfield. Selling the dummy, pretend to go right, going left. A left-footed effort by Dinjo Crowley all the way over the bar.
Also, pop point by Dinjo Crowley. Note that his friends as Bush Crowley, the man from Ratmore. And it was Eamon O'Donoghue, the man from Ballylongford. He got the ball in the middle of the field. He's drifting back. Eamon O'Donoghue coming out, helping the backs and forwards. Gave the ball to Crowley. Crowley, left leg, got it way out the field. That's a wonderful point.
A 5 points to 2 advantage was Kerry's at the break. With the conditions, what they were, there was apprehension as to whether the Kingdom could maintain their advantage. Tom Prendergast recalls.
It was an atrocious day. There were very high winds. There was very low scoring in the game. Kerry were playing against a gale force wind in the second half, and we were only leading at half time by 3 points, and I'd say everybody was of the view, and particularly our Kerry supporters, I'd say that that was another All-Ireland gone by the way.
When the teams re-emerged for the second half, Kerry fans were shocked to see that Prendergast was now wearing the number 9 jersey, while DJ Crowley had 5 on his back. There had been a mix-up at half-time when Kerry put on a fresh set of jerseys. Prendergast and Crowley each took the wrong one. Every match is a defining moment. The one in this game arrived less than 1 minute into the second half.
So then we're ready for the start of the second half. Paul, I don't know who's going to cap for the second half. Larry Cotton, Willie Bryan for Offaly. Pat Keenan now showing great injection of pace, taking on the hollow shape. Pat Keenan drives it long inside to the Kerry square. Dangerous inside. And Evans with the kick, and Johnny Cullity wishing with a brilliant save.
Yeah, that was an absolutely brilliant save by the Killarney man. Big long ball. ball came in from Pat Keane and the ball broke around just around the square, and Sean Evans, a big powerful forward for Offaly, turned it out the right leg. He hit an absolutely bullet of a shot, and Johnny Cullity, a Miami Legion man, got down, brought an absolutely brilliant save. With that save, Kerry on his winning way, we'll have to wait and see. Second half just begun, Gary.
Mihola Murahertig believes there would have been a different outcome to the match but for Cullity's intervention.
"'Twas a man from Castlemaine hit it, John Evans. The family had transferred up, I think, from maybe around somewhere near Castlemaine. He played midfield for Offaly, he played full forward. He was a good all-round player that never got credit for it. Now, he was no more than 7 yards out, you know, to the railway goal, and he took a low blast at it, but somehow Johnny Cullity blocked it well. Offaly would have won that All-Ireland only for that save of Johnny Cullity."
Johnny Cullity is somewhat modest in his own assessment of the save.
"Sean Evans caught a ball, turned to his left, Paul Donohue, and that was a Seamus Murphy, we're tracking him anyway, and to me anyway, like it looked like he could only put the ball into my left side of the goal, so I went to my left and he shot to the left and I saved it, simple enough as that. Well, it was a very important save, I suppose, in the day, and at that stage, no, they were attacking well. We had played with wind in the first half, I think we were only up a couple of points, so I suppose the game was in the balance at that stage, and maybe if they had got a goal at that stage, it might have driven on awfully to win the game, but I suppose it made some bit of a difference anyway, in the day."
Cullity's save may have been seen as instinctive, but Wishy Fogarty says there's a story behind the moment.
"High ball came into Evans, got the ball, he turned around all in one movement, shot for the left-hand corner of the net. Cullity threw himself full length and brought off a brilliant save and cleared the ball. In the weeks leading up to that, we had been training in Tralee, but Johnny called for me here in the evenings when we wouldn't have Kerry training, and both of us would go down to St. Brendan's College Field in the New Road, and we'd be togged out and we'd be practising ourselves. I'd be in goal for 20 minutes, he'd be in goal. But one particular day, he said to me, I want to try out this now, he said. We had another fellow with us, some fellow kicked in the ball. I want you, he said, to get the ball, turn around and kick it all in one movement to my left-hand side. Do that now, he said, number of times. We had a fellow kicking in the ball to me. I jump up, catch the ball, turn around all in one movement and kick the ball to his left. I did that 10 times. He says, that's the way Sean Evans shoots, he said. I want to be ready for that. Do it. And he did, and I kept doing it. And we went to the All-Ireland. And what had happened was, Evans got the ball, turned around, shot, and Cullity saved, but he had practised it.
Two unanswered points saw Offaly cut the deficit to 1 within 7 minutes of the second period. Scores from Mick O'Dwyer and DJ Crowley restored Kerry's 3-point advantage. After 10 minutes, it was 7 points to 4 to the Kingdom. An Offaly free from McTague, followed by a point from Keenan, left a solitary point between the sides once more. Kerry were hanging on, 7-6, entering the final quarter. The remaining 15 minutes belonged to the Kingdom.
To Mick O'Dwyer. Mick O'Dwyer 35 yards out. But Paulie Sandin Higgins breaks it down. Pat Griffin across the field, and goal, and Eamon Engel. How did that not go into the Offaly goal?
Oh, that was a great opportunity for Kerry. Mick O'Connell's kick went in. Mick O'Dwyer got it sort of dummy. Hit the ball into Pat Griffin. And the clip break in Carmen and sent the lovely ball across the face of the goal. And Eamon O'Donoghue, the belly lot from that, came in and pulled in the ball. He did an open goal in front of him. How did he miss that? And pulled the ball wide. Bad miss by Eamon O'Donoghue.
Oh, bad miss, and 7-6. Kerry still lead. Out towards the Kenny McCormick. Gathers it to the number 2 for Offaly. Drives it long. And this is Tom Prendergast, wearing number 9 for Kerry. Tom clears it left-footed, not a great clearance. It's gathered there by Mick O'Dwyer, who's left corner forward position. Dintro Crowley now wears number 5. He's going through, and it's going to be a free into Kerry.
Yeah, but great work by Tom Prendergast, the wing back. He's wearing number 9, Gary. Where did he get the number 9 jersey? And he's wearing wing back. We'd have to look, check that after the game. And he put the ball in. Dintro Crowley was fouled. This is going to be free in. And Mick O'Connell is the man coming up to take it, Gary. And you'd expect the maestro from Valencia Island, O'Connell the boy from Valencia, you'd expect him to put this over the bar.
Well, indeed, he's definitely wearing number 8, and he's dead straight in front of the post. And Mick O'Connell drives it high, long, and over the bar. And another score for Kerry. They look well in this 1969 final. So the free out for Offaly taken. Great catch. The big goofy by Mick Gleeson. Leaves it to Mick O'Connell. Sells a couple of dummies. High goes Liam Higgins. Broken down to Pat Griffin. Pat Griffin. He's got the ball back again. Was he fouled on the way through? He was. A brilliant run by Pat Griffin. And it's a free into Kerry.
Oh, beautiful footballer, Griffin. Lovely, stylish player. One of the most best Irish players we've seen in Kerry jersey, and it was Nico Tannenman coming into left in a lovely passing to Deason Doe to Pat Griffin. Pat Griffin was fouled. Mick the Wild, I think Gary, Mick the Wild definitely is going to tip this over the bar. An easy tip up or free for the men from Waterford.
So it's a free for Kerry in front of the goal. Eamon O'Donoghue fouled. 6 minutes left. Kerry lead 9-6. This one is going to be given to DJ Crowley. In fact, he's only placing it for Mick O'Connell. So the referee says to come on, hurry it up a little bit of tactics we see there played by both of them.
Yes indeed, Gary, Mick O'Connell is probably going to tip this over the bar, and you're spot on. Over the bar it goes. First of all, Brendan Lynch got the ball, he was going to take it. Then he gave the ball to Dinjo Crowley, and Dinjo Crowley started putting the ball down in the ground and looking around, and of course Kerry up there against a very strong breeze. Mick O'Connell came up, he didn't place it and popped the ball over the bar.
10-6, and Paul O'Donoghue has been penalised inside the Ouija, and it's a close in free to Offaly.
Yeah, big long ball came in from Sean Evans there, dropped him with the crossbar, and Johnny pulled it in the goal, wearing a cap, wearing his Killarney cap, as the fella says, and he cut the ball, but Paul O'Donoghue was pulling and dragging his man, Gary. Free in, this will be an easy trip over for you, and it is. Tony McKeague tips it over the bar there, and the 10.7 Kerry lead, and remember, they're playing against a very, very stiff breeze.
Sean Evans and Kevin Kilmorey trying to get out for this one, but it's going to be a kick out again for Kerry, and it looks now 10.7 Ouija, the closing stage of the Kerry will hang on.
Is it looking good? It looks like the Kerry are going to win their 21st All Ireland title. They're coming of age, and trainer Jackie Lyon has the men in great shape. It's looking good for Kerry now.
The kick out again into the far side of the field, and Mick Gleeson is out. It shows a great burst of pace. Mick Gleeson drives it long and high. There's a race for this, and Liam Higgins has got away from his man. Liam Higgins going through, bearing down on goal. Liam Higgins with a kick, and it hits the upright, and it's back out into play for Kerry. Most of lucky.
Oh, great bit of play by Kerry, and Mick Gleeson, the man from far, he cut down in front of the Cusick stand. A wonderful scintillating run by him. He passed the ball inside to Liam Higgins. The man from this board came in along the end line. He hit an absolutely rocket of a shot. Popped the goal. Furlan was beaten. All ends up. They're back up the upright and clear. Great chance for Kerry.
The following week's Kerry Man headline read, "Indestructible DJ Crowley was the hero of an historic triumph." Crowley believes he merely had what he calls one of those days.
I just had a good game on the day. Some days you play a game of football, and I know many footballers would agree with this, you can't get away from the ball. It'll follow you like a magnet. Uh-huh. Other days you break your heart and you can't get near it, you know? Uh-huh. So I had a day where I couldn't get away from the ball in 69.
10-7 was a respectable scoreline, given the conditions the teams had to endure. Seamus McGarrell admits it was best to be a defender that afternoon.
To the backstay, because there was a terrible swilling wind in Crow Park, and it was very, very, very difficult on forwards, because the way the wind was swirling around in the stands, and there was a very strong wind, so it made it easier for the backs. I think the forwards had to, you know, they had to get very, very near the goal to score.
Brendan Lynch believes the pressure of the occasion didn't help either.
Well, there was certainly added pressure, which may have contributed to the fact that I think we had a very good side in 69, but didn't play particularly well in that final. It was not a good game, and we were grateful to Mick O'Connell's kicking, really, that won us the game. It was on a windy day, not a great spectacle to watch, but it was important to win. As you say, we hadn't won for several years.
The day after the match, Kerry captain Johnny Cullerty and his teammates were guests of honour at Guinness and RTE, as Seamus McGarrell recalls.
Monday morning after the game, that time we used to be invited to Montrose, and we'd be shown the film of the match with the two teams, and then we'd have a reception thereafter. And Jackie Lyon, God rest him, was our trainer, and he was working for Guinness, and he invited us down to the St. James's Gate, to the Guinness plant, and we all had a sample the Guinness, and we came home by train. Our first stop was Rathmore, where I still remember Father Kelly, who would be Sean Kelly's uncle, giving a rapturous speech, homecoming speech in Rathmore, and speaking of how delighted Kerry were to welcome home the 21st winning All-Ireland team.
It was a special journey back to the kingdom for Rathmore's first All-Ireland medal winner, DJ Crowley.
Kerry's 21st after not breaking the 7-year tradition, and the celebration started in Mallow. and then on to Bantir. And the crowd in Rathmore was unbelievable. There's a big walk over the team, over the railway tracks in Rathmore, and we all went up on this bridge, is what you'll call it. And it was, I don't know, it was thousands of people in Rathmore, and I was the first person ever to win in All-Ireland from Rathmore. And I'd say it must have been the first time that Mickey O'Connell ever spoke in public. And he made a great statement where he says he'd like to congratulate, he says, Dean Joe Crawley, he says, the first player from Armagh to win in All-Ireland, he says, the best midfielder in Kerry. And there was a bit of a pause, and he said, after myself.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.